This is Jim Inkster. Coming today, we'll visit with LSU journalism professor Bob Mann, former aide to Senators John Breaux, Russell Long, and Bennett Johnston, and Governor Kathleen Blanco. Bob Mann on the state of affairs in Louisiana for 2014, including this year's election highlight, Mary Landrieu seeking a fourth term against the challenge of Bill Cassidy and others. We'll talk with Bob Mann about this. Also, LSU snagged the top running back in the country, perhaps the top recruit in high school football for this year, Leonard Fournette of St. Aug in New Orleans. What does this mean for the Fighting Tigers of 2014? We'll talk about it with Cody Worsham. Last night in New Orleans, bad night for Nick Saban. His Alabama Crimson Tide lost by 2 touchdowns to the Oklahoma Sooners. And we'll talk about Pete Maravich, too. 26 years since he died. Now the news. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside our area, please call 877-217-5757. You may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. We start with Bob Mann, author of 9 books and the professor of renown at the Manship School of Mass Communication at Louisiana State University. Former aide to Senators John Breaux, Russell Long, and Bennett Johnston, and to Governor Kathleen Babineaux Blanco. We'll talk with Bob Mann about our state for 2014, and he is now a columnist of note for the New Orleans Times-Picayune and NOLA.com. Good to visit with you, Bob Mann, on the 67th birthday of Lewis Elwood Woody Jenkins.
Oh, is it Woody's birthday? Good morning, Jim.
Yeah, and Woody, of course, nearly won in 1996. Against Mary Landrieu, she prevailed by less than 6,000 votes, but she is the last Democrat standing, and we want to talk with you about that. But as we look ahead, not so far away, 10 months, how's it looking for the senior senator from Louisiana?
Well, I think it's still too early to tell. I think the odds are that she'll either lose it by a whisker or win it by a whisker. It's going to be a very, very close race. I don't think it'll be a blowout either way. If Cassidy is able to beat her, it won't be by a lot. And if she's able to win, it won't be by a lot. The interesting part about this race so far for me is really are two things. Number one, the fact that Cassidy has not yet been able to put away the opposition in his own party. He's still getting opponents on the right coming into the race, Representative Paul Hollis just this week, and now there are reports that Tony Perkins, former legislator and head of the American Family Council, is thinking about getting in the race, or at least getting a lot of encouragement to run. And then he's got Paul Manis, who's been on your show a number of times, running even farther to the right as a Tea Party candidate. He's just not been able to coalesce the Republicans on his party, and I think that's a problem for him, and it redounds to Landrieu's benefit.
Well, it will likely come down to a December election. That's one thing that these multiple candidates do, even though they're right now they're all from the Republicans. It seems to make a runoff more likely, and some believe that a runoff puts Senator Landrieu in a perilous condition. She survived runoffs before against Woody Jenkins and against Susie Terrell. John Kennedy she beat without a runoff, but it could be an interesting December.
Well, here's what I think is possibly shaping up to happen with all these Republicans who are getting in the race along with Cassidy, is that you could have something of a repeat of what happened in the presidential Republican primaries in this last presidential election, where the nominee Mitt Romney was driven farther and farther to the right because of the primary process, because he had all these people to the right of him, and to get through that process and to coalesce his own party behind him, he had to move much farther to the right than he was comfortable, and he moved so far to the right in the primaries that it hobbled him, it really crippled him. Once he got to the general election, and the same could happen to Cassidy. He needs to be reaching out to people in the middle, these swing voters, these independents, and instead he may be forced to reach out to the Tea Party, which will alienate the middle and drive perhaps enough of those people to Landrieu to help her eke out a victory.
297-5633 for Bob Mann, a political strategist in addition to being a professor and writer of note. We're talking about the U.S. Senate election for 2014 with Mary Landrieu seeking a fourth term. She's won three races, never receiving more than 52% of the votes in any of the three tries against Woody Jenkins, Susie Terrell, and John Kennedy. Now, when we look ahead to this race, Bernie Pinsenat, who is a legitimate pollster and numbers cruncher, he thinks Landrieu is essentially toast, that she can't win because of her vote on Obamacare. Is that going to be a major issue come November and December?
Well, it could be. I mean, it's still, I think it's still too early to tell whether people will generally conclude that Obamacare is a success or a failure. There are a lot of people who believe it's a failure and will never be persuaded that it is anything other than a failure. But the problem is that those people are already not voting for Landrieu. They've decided they're going to vote for Cassidy or someone else. So Landrieu's already lost those people. So I think when it comes to Obamacare, and to a large extent, the lines are already drawn. And Bernie may be right. The lines may be already drawn in a way that makes it impossible for Landrieu to win. But I think there are still enough people in the middle who perhaps are not who are not decided about Obamacare. I mean, there are people who love it, and there are people who hate it. But there are enough people in the middle who if they are given evidence, presented evidence that it's actually working in a way that helps them or helps people that they care about, they may be persuaded to either vote for Landrieu or it won't be that big of an issue for them. Something else may be an issue for them. I predict that something else is going to intervene between now and then that'll also have an impact on this race. We don't know what it is, but I don't think it's going to be entirely a referendum on Obamacare. And if it is, then it's going to depend on what people think about Obamacare mm-hmm. in the state at that point.
Well, Cassidy is accused by the Landrieu camp of proposing an almost identical bill to what is now called Obamacare when he was a member of the Louisiana legislature.
Well, he did. He proposed legislation, actually, I think, three or three years in a row that created the kind of health care, state health care exchange, and that also envisioned relying on federal dollars to support that exchange. And it looks very much like the health care exchanges that the Congress eventually set up under Obamacare. And that highlights something that I think Senator Landrieu probably should talk about, and that I've written about in my columns, is that really Obamacare is a creation of conservative Republicans. It was the Heritage Foundation in 1989 that published this paper that suggested a mandate and suggested the basic outlines of what we now have. It was Senator John Chafee, Republican of Rhode Island, and 18 Republican senators who signed on to a bill in 1993 that had a mandate, that had the essence of Obamacare in it. As recently as 2009, Senator Lindsey Graham from South Carolina was on a bill that had a mandate. So this is a Republican idea. Of course, we all know that Mitt Romney enacted it in Massachusetts, Republican governor of Massachusetts at the time. And the president adopted a Republican conservative idea, and overnight it became socialism.
Well, Senator Cassidy, who became Congressman Cassidy, was once a Democrat, and I recall covering a rally for Michael Dukakis on October 21st, 1988, more than 25 years ago when he was running for president. He was at UNO with Senator John Breaux, who was supporting him. He was with Albert Brooks, the comedian and actor. And little did I find out later that perhaps in that crowd was another ardent supporter of Michael Stanley Dukakis at the time, Bill Cassidy. He was writing letters to the editor, criticizing President Reagan and praising Michael Dukakis as the savior for America. Is this going to be an issue for Congressman Cassidy?
Well, it very well could be. You know, and don't forget, he also contributed to Mary Landrieu's reelection in 2002. So the first time that I ever heard of Bill Cassidy was when I was working for Governor Blanco, then Lieutenant Governor Blanco, running for governor, and this this doctor who I'd never heard of wrote a letter in the Advocate attacking the governor over health care. And we found that very helpful to us in that campaign. But that is a problem that I think Bill Cassidy has, is that people in Baton Rouge who have known him for many, many, many years personally and know of his reputation because of his on and off involvement in politics, know him to be a fairly moderate Democrat who became a Republican when he decided to run for political office. And that's a fact. He came to see me, came to back when he was thinking about running for the state Senate back in 2007. And when he left my office, he had me convinced that he was a liberal Democrat. And I think that's because he probably was at the time.
But he's not any longer, or so he says.
Well, people's opinions and their outlooks do change. So I'm not suggesting I don't know what's in his heart, but I just know that people around here in Baton Rouge for a long, long, long time knew him to be a Democrat, and his activity in politics, his contributions to Senator Landrieu and his support for Governor Blanco, his support for Michael Dukakis seemed to provide evidence of that.
Not just any Democrat, but a Dukakis Democrat. And people forget.
Well, he supported two governors of Massachusetts for president. They just happened to be of the opposite parties.
There you go. Veronica on Jefferson Highway. Veronica, good morning. You're on the air with Bob Mann.
Hi. First, I'd like to know, was Bill Cassidy a pro-life Democrat? And my second part of my compound question is, who are these middle ground people in Louisiana? I didn't think it was possible that you could go too far to the right in this state anymore. And you mentioned Bill Cassidy alienating middle voters. I didn't think they existed anymore in Louisiana. Thanks.
All right. That's a good question.
Well, I'll answer the first. I think that Cassidy has always been a pro-life Democrat. I may be wrong about that, from what I know, he and his wife, who I think has been very active in pro-life causes.
But obviously supported pro-choice candidates Landrieu and Dukakis and others.
Yeah. Sure.
Okay, and what about, is there a moderate majority or a significant minority of moderates in Louisiana?
Well, I think there are enough of them to win elections, and I think we're seeing in statewide elections, most recently perhaps in the lieutenant governor's race between Jay Darden and Billy Nungesser, that these Democrats and moderate Democrats are sort of turning into the swing voters. Now, that really only applies when you've got two Republicans running against each other. We saw it up in northeast Louisiana between Neil Reiser and Vance McAllister, the Democrats, moderate Democrats, and liberal Democrats, for that matter, decided that race. There are enough to maybe not, I would call them more swing voters than moderates, perhaps. I don't know exactly what a pollster would call them, but I think there are enough people who are willing to consider one or the other, a Democrat or a Republican. There are enough people who do swing back and forth in these elections that are in a close race, they could decide the race, and I believe that's what will happen in this race between Landrieu, Cassidy, and the rest of the Republicans who will be in the race.
Lynn in Melrose. Hi, Lynn. You're on with Bob.
Yeah, good morning, Bob and Jim. I wanted you to comment, both of you, or either of you, on, well, first of all, I'm sure you heard that the Koch brothers, Americans for Prosperity, have started a chapter in Louisiana, and they're campaigning against Maryland to actively save a lot of money. I read the other day that I was astounded to see the Daily Coast, an ultra-liberal blog, came out against Mary because they said she's in the pocket of oil and gas. And I'm thinking, what in the world's going on in this world, you know?
All right. What about Landrieu being popular with the oil and gas community?
Well, she's about to be or may already be the chair of the Senate Energy Committee. And even before that, she was close to the energy sector in the state, and what statewide official wouldn't be. It's a very important part of our economy. So that's not surprising. I didn't know about the Daily Coast thing, but I think it's troubling for Democrats when they start turning on each other that way.
297-5633. We shall return with Bob Mann after this 90-second pause on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Bob Mann, former aide to three Louisiana U.S. senators and one governor, author of 9 books, and professor at Louisiana State University, is with us to talk about politics today and in 2014. 297-5633. Getting back to Lynn and Melrose's question, he says the Koch brothers are involved in Louisiana, and that they are. The Landrieu camp has issued a press release saying the out-of-state billionaire Koch brothers are back on Louisiana airwaves with another misleading, it's termed grossly misleading, attack that outrageously cuts video footage out of context in a blatant effort to distort Senator Landrieu's record of working to fix the Affordable Care Act. So this is an issue that Republicans believe they have some currency with in this election, and I'm sure it'll be something used against Senator Landrieu in Louisiana, Senator Mark Pryor in Arkansas. It's tough for a Democrat to win in the South now. There aren't many left standing, and this vote that some of the senators cast, principally Landrieu and Pryor, is right now issue number one for the Republicans. Bob, you're saying that this strategy could work or it could backfire. Too early to tell.
Yeah, I don't know. I once thought it would backfire or it could backfire. But after the disastrous rollout of this program, which I think by anybody's standard was a complete and total disaster, I think that it's more problematic now for Landrieu and others because it puts them on the defensive. If this had been done well, if it had been rolled out properly, if the website had worked, the news about Obamacare would be much more positive and it would have framed it in a way that I think would have allowed Landrieu to run on the accomplishments and the good that it's doing. But instead, it put everybody on the left. Democrats who are for re-election, it put them on the defensive, and it's going to be hard for them to get off. I think they can, but it's going to take longer, and it gave a lot of ammunition to the right to come after people like Landrieu. Now, the problem is that she can't change her vote. She just can't change her vote. She voted for it. She's been on record saying she'd do it again. I mean, she has planted her flag very proudly on the Obamacare mat there, and she's got to run and defend it. That's all she can do at this point.
Laverne in Mid-City. Hi, Laverne. You're on WRKF. Good morning.
Good morning. Jim, I'm going to hate going back to work on Monday. I've enjoyed my holiday and being able to listen to you every morning.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
One thing I want to say is the voters have not forgotten the escapades of October with Ted Cruz and the government shutdown. I think this rollout of Obamacare is, I think Mr. Pinsonet's making a bigger deal out of it. I think the nation's making a bigger deal out of it. I think the voters' memory is very, very long. And I think Representative Cassidy, if he can be shown as a part of the party of no, that Mary's not going to have a problem.
Okay. Thank you, Laverne. Bob, there's something about the Senator Landrieu that enables her to survive when others do not. Laverne makes some points that will certainly be to her advantage, most likely.
Yeah. This is probably the most hostile electorate that Mary Landrieu will have ever faced, and that is her problem. In the past, she's run very good campaigns, and she's skillfully navigated the minefields. She has articulated her message better than her opponents. And perhaps most importantly, she has always had a fairly weak opponent, someone who is fairly easy to attack. And if she has really any hope, I think one thing would be that the country's and the state's opinion of Obamacare could radically change, and that would help her certainly. I think that's not likely to happen. But if she has any hope, it's that she has got a candidate in Bill Cassidy who turns out to not be that good of a candidate. And I think the the jury is out on whether he is a great candidate or not, whether he will be somewhat like John Kennedy, very easy to attack as a chameleon who changes his stripes to match the race and the electorate that he happens to be before at the time. And that's what she did last time with Kennedy, and it worked really well. Can she do that again with Cassidy? I don't know, but I think their opportunity is there to do it because of Cassidy's history of involvement in Democratic politics. He's not been a consistent conservative Republican, and I think that opens him up to attack.
Charles on North Foster. Good morning, Charles. You're on WRKF.
Morning, Jim. Good morning, Bob. And let me first remind the listeners that the Koch brothers are not just political powers in Louisiana. At Louisiana State University, your very dear alma maters, they put some dollars in the coffers for some professorships. So let's be completely honest in disclosing that the Koch brothers and LSU have a working relationship. Now, getting past that, I hope Mary Landrieu's campaign is listening. You have here in Bill Cassidy a congressman who tried to shut down FEMA. I wonder how voters are going to think about that when hurricane season and voting season are rolling around in 2014. You have a guy here who was critical of the president handling of BP. Well, go up to Alaska and ask those folks how Exxon handled them after the Valdez spill and see if they'll trade places with the folks in Louisiana. And then speaking of the Koch brothers, back to them. Our good governor and the folks at Bayou Corn now know why Bobby Jindal has tunnel vision when it comes to Bayou Corn.
All right. Charles on North Foster, fired up.
I think Mary could perhaps use Charles as a spokesperson. That was good.
Mike in New Iberia. Hi, Mike. Good morning. You're on WRKF.
Good morning, Jim. I'm a supporter and friend of Bill Cassidy. I'd say this, he, of all the healthcare professionals out there, he's one of the top as far as who's done noble work for the underserved population as a physician. And in terms of his maturation process, I think it was Churchill who said, if you're 20 and not liberal, you don't have a heart. And if you're 40 and not conservative, you don't have a brain. Bill has a heart and a brain.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Mike in New Iberia making some points for Congressman Cassidy, but the congressman was 31 when he backed Michael Stanley Dukakis, and he was 45 when he backed Mary Landrieu for the U.S. Senate in 2002 against three Republicans, Susie Terrell, John Cooksey, and Tony Perkins, three brands of Republicanism, and he chose Mary Landrieu. 12 years ago.
Yeah, I think that's not a youthful indiscretion, is it? That's hard to classify that as a youthful indiscretion.
At 45, Henry Hyde would say so.
But he
obviously has changed his political colors, and he's done so. He's never run as a Democrat, to my knowledge, but he...
Here's what Cassidy, I think, ought to do, Jim. The caller may be right, about that, that he has matured, as he put it. But I think Cassidy needs to explain why has he matured, and how has he matured, and why did he contribute to Mary Landrieu's campaign in 2002, and now thinks that she's a socialist? Why did he think Michael Dukakis was a better candidate for president than Ronald Reagan, and now he is in Reagan's party? What exactly happened to change him? This isn't something that happened in his teens. This is something that happened in his adult, his very adult life. There was an event in his life that changed him, a Road to Damascus event. But he might want to tell us what that is.
Well, Casey notes that when Cassidy was 46, he was backing Kathleen Blanco against Bobby Jindal. And that's true as well. Jim at the Mall of Louisiana. Jim, good morning. You're on with Bob Mann.
Good morning. A couple quick little points. The Road to Damascus is called You Realize You Can't Be Elected as a Democrat right now. Wonderful Road to Damascus, that is. And then the other thing is that why in the world would we, as the state of Louisiana, who are so greatly dependent upon the oil and gas industry for our revenue, want to get rid of the head of the oil and gas committee? It just absolutely blows my mind that somehow that would be a bad thing right now.
Well, Bennett Johnston was chairman of the Energy Committee as well, and he got challenged by David Duke, and Mr. Duke got 60% of the white votes against against Bennett Johnston.
You know, Jim, voters, I don't think voters really care much. I agree that that's important for Louisiana to have that chairmanship, but I think voters really don't care that much about it. When Bennett Johnston, I was the press secretary for that campaign in 1990. Bennett Johnston was not only chairman of the Energy Committee, he was the de facto chairman of the Appropriations Committee. John Stennis was in his dotage and couldn't really run the committee, so Bennett Johnston was running that committee too, and bringing home billions and billions and billions of pork for Louisiana all over the state. And as you point out, 60% of the white people in the state voted for the other guy, and we never got any traction on what he was doing for Louisiana in the way of delivering the goods. And it's very hard to translate a committee chairmanship into what it does for your state. Remember, there have been there's been a Speaker of the House that has been turned out, and Tom Foley. The voters turned Tom Daschle out of office when he was Majority Leader of the Senate. Voters don't really care about that kind of stuff very much.
It's hard to believe that campaign with Johnston and Duke was 24 years ago, Bob.
Yeah, yeah, time ago.
You and I are getting older. Randy and Zachary. Hi, Randy. Good morning.
Good morning. I just want to make a point that Ronald Reagan spent a good portion of his life as a Democrat and gradually moved away and became a Republican. Thanks.
Yeah, he did, and he backed Harry Truman for president in 1948. Reagan was 37 at the time. He evolved into a Republican and an extremely conservative one, but as governor of California, he signed at the time the most liberal abortion rights bill in America. He was not a particularly conservative governor of California, but his rhetoric was such, Bob, that conservatives believed he was the real deal. Does Bill Cassidy have the same kind of stump appeal and television persona as Ronald Wilson Reagan?
No, I don't think I haven't seen it yet, although I don't think he's truly been tested on the stump yet, but. I don't see Cassidy as another Reagan. I think it's also worth pointing out, as you sort of alluded to, that Reagan would have a hard time getting elected in this Republican Party of today. If Ronald Reagan were running today, he wouldn't. I don't think he'd have a chance of getting the nomination of his party. He'd be too. He wouldn't be conservative enough.
297-5633, Inkster Show at WRKF.org, and our remaining time with Bob Mann. Barbara Forrest, the professor at Southeastern Louisiana University, writes, I watched Bill Cassidy help steer the Creationist Louisiana Science Education Act through the legislative process and argue for it using creationist talking points. He did this at the behest of the Louisiana Family Forum. He continues to have a close relationship with the Louisiana Family Forum. Would Mr. Mann please comment on this?
Well, that's some pretty appalling pandering, I would say. That's all I can say. It just amazes me. As Dr. Forrest knows, there was a survey that was just released. I think it was a Gallup survey. No, it was Pew, just the other, showing that the percentage of Republicans who don't believe in evolution is going up, not down. And this is a party that doesn't believe in science. It just fundamentally does not believe in science. And when it comes to climate change and evolution and other policies that are driven by science, they have turned against it, and Cassidy has thrown in with those people. But I don't believe for a minute that Bill Cassidy truly doubts evolution. It's pandering of the worst kind.
Roy on Delgado. Roy, good morning. You're on with Bob.
Hey, Bob.
Good morning.
How you doing?
This sounds like Happy Roy Fletcher.
How you doing, Roy? Happy New Year.
A couple of things. One is, he obviously believes in evolution, at least political evolution.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, but Duke got 63% against Billy Johnston among white voters.
Okay.
I've calculated that completely at the time, and I was stunned. Taught me a lesson, and I just wanted to throw that in there that he got 63
against Bennett Johnston.
against Bennett Johnson.
And, over 55 against Edwin Edwards.
Yeah, I think it's about 57, 58, Jim. I mean, one of those things that is a quarter of a century ago, but it leaves tracks for a long time.
Well, Bernie Pinsonad, who crunches numbers like you do, like Bob does, he says, you know, if a Democrat can get 35% of the white vote statewide, he or she can win.
Absolutely. But, I mean, I think it's more like 33.
But they can't get it. Can't get one in three white votes. Why is that?
I think it's more like 33, and I think it's a, I mean, it's a collision of forces that that we have very little control over in this state. I mean, it's national collision of forces. It's and it's the way that. But I don't necessarily think that it's impossible to get 33 if you're a Democrat.
Okay.
I don't think that's necessarily impossible. And, you know, I mean, against a candidate that's fuzzing like Cassidy, I mean, twiddly dee, twiddly dumb. Which is what y'all doing here. Y'all twiddly dee and twiddly dumb.
All right. Thank you, Roy.
Which one is twiddly D and which one is dumb?
Well, Senator Landrieu, Roy is right and Bernie's right. That's one thing I think we can agree on. If she can get about one in three white votes, she will be reelected. But it's going to be, according to most, a challenge for her, meaning that Cassidy, it's almost a given, will get at least 60% of the white vote, maybe 70%. And if he gets 70, he wins. If he gets 60, he loses. So there's where your swing votes are, right there. It's the moderate whites, and the battleground as far as changing minds and winning those on the fence. There aren't that many out there, Bob. Probably 100, 200,000 voters out there that are malleable, pliable. How does Cassidy and how does Landrieu, how do they make their cases?
Well, you know, that's a very interesting question, and I think you're going to see some science and data, big data, enter a Louisiana race in a way that it never has before, and that means that both campaigns are going to be doing work that in a sophisticated way that's never been done in the state when it comes to identifying their voters and finding ways to communicate with them in targeted ways, maybe not through television, but through mail and phone calls and even personal visits by canvassers. But they're going to know who those voters are, and their job is to identify them and get them to the polls. It's a very efficient and effective way of turning out your vote. It's what Barack Obama did in 2012, and it was documented in the book The Victory Lab by Sasha Eisenberg, and candidates like Landrieu and I assume Cassidy are adopting those tactics and methods and putting them into place as we speak.
Well, Bob Mann, we thank you for joining us today. Bob's column in the Sunday New Orleans Times-Picayune is Why Louisiana's Young People Are Asking, Should I Stay or Should I Go? And we'll talk with Bob, I hope, very often this year. Good to visit with you again today, Robert Mann.
Thanks, Jim. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. And we shall return in 90 seconds on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. Inkster Show at WRKF.org works if you would like to join us online. Do want to note that tonight at 6:30 at the Manship Theater, the film King of Herrings, critically acclaimed, the 2013 official selection from the New Orleans Film Festival. It will be showing at the Manship Theater. John Meese, local guy, is one of the stars. Carl Palmer's in that film. Others include Joe Crest, who's been on this show a few times, Eddie Jemison. It's quite a crew of Louisiana luminaries, and according to those who have seen it, it's an outstanding production. David Jensen also in the film. Today, if you heard Morning Edition this morning, one of the birthdays mentioned was that of Stephen Stills, the great musician, born in Dallas on this date in 1945. He's 69 years old, and he also is a LSU product. He did not graduate, but he attended Louisiana State University before he went off to fame and fortune, and was one of the members, of course, of Crosby, Stills, and Nash. And Stephen Stills, in 1967, when he was all of 22, he produced his signature song, here's how he sounded, 47 years ago.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Stephen Stills was named to the Songwriters Hall of Fame in 2009. Another Louisiana songwriter born on this date in 1947, Lewis Elwood Woody Jenkins, better known as a Politico. He's 67 today. And in 1970, when Pete Maravich was becoming the all-time leading scorer in NCAA history, a record that still stands, by the way, 3,667 points in just 83 games at LSU, an average of 44.2 points per game, Woody Jenkins penned a song that was quite popular in these parts, about Pistol Pete Maravich.
Maravich, oh Maravich, love to think, love to score, love to hear the people roar. Just a boy of 22, you made a name at LSU, you've much more yet to do. Maravich, oh Maravich.
Hard to believe that's Woody Jenkins, the man who lost a U.S. Senate race to Mary Landrieu in 1996 by 5,788 votes. Pistol Pete Maravich was only 40 when he died, born the same year as Woody Jenkins, by the way, in 1947. 40 years old when he died. His records are significant. Nobody in college basketball has dominated the scene the way he did as far as points produced, the way Pete Maravich did from 1967 to 1970 at Louisiana State University. And he is not in the LSU Athletic Hall of Fame because he did not receive a degree. Now, that rule has been waived for others, including one other person, Frank Bryan, who's still alive, who had 65 years to get a degree after World War II and did not. He was inducted this year. And of course, Frank Bryan was a fine basketball player as well, but not in the league with Pistol Pete Maravich. And Pistol Pete would have been 66 years old had he lived. He died 26 years ago this Sunday in California, playing basketball with the Reverend James Dobson. And he died in a pickup game. His last words were, "I feel great." But he had an enlarged heart, and it took his life very early at the age of 40. And why is this man, whose name is on the Assembly Center, the Pete Maravich Assembly Center, where the LSU Athletic Hall of Fame is situated, he's not in the Hall of Fame? How can LSU rationalize this? With us calling in from beautiful Oklahoma, where it is a festive day, is Hugh Woodstock Buckingham, the former linguistics professor at Louisiana State University, who's leading the charge to put Pistol Pete in the LSU Athletic Hall of Fame. Good morning, Dr. Buckingham.
How you doing, Jim?
Doing
good to hear your voice.
Good to hear your voice. Now, why do you think that Pistol Pete is being denied admission to the LSU Athletic Hall of Fame?
Oh, well, it's some past skirmish between some legislators and some LSU, I guess, big wigs that for some reason didn't want Pete in. So it's still going on. I asked Joe Oliva that question. He said, well, the legislature was the body that put the name, affixed the name on the building, sort of saying to me that there were some people at LSU that did not want it. And I think that's still going on.
I can't understand this. When there is an exception that has been made for Frank Bryan, Why in the world wouldn't they put Pete Maravich in, who arguably is the best-known LSU athlete of them all, better known than Shaquille O'Neal, better known than Billy Cannon, a guy who brought great acclaim to the old war school, and yet he is not in the LSU Athletic Hall of Fame. It seems inexplicable.
Well, it's not really inexplicable. We've had these skirmishes before with people who feel they count, and some of them are at LSU, and some of them are in the legislature. And as long as that's it, I just sort of, you know, I didn't even know that aspect. Dale Brown told me, "You didn't know that?" I said, "No, I had no idea that there was some feeling that, well, the legislature put Pete's name on the palace."
Well, Hugh speaks with some authority. He was a member of the LSU Athletic Council for many years, and if I recall, at one point, you were actually backing the rule that requires a degree.
Oh, yes, I did. That's because they wanted to rub it out at that point because Shaq was leaving and they needed some dough. That's all right. You know, I think that it's back in now. But the irony is I had no idea that it was out or in because in a year or so I was off the council and I hadn't heard anything. And now all of a sudden I'm hearing that that rule is still there. Well, that's fine. But Shaq's in, you know, he came back. But there's this exception clause in the hall. And as long as that's in there so clear, it's hard for most people that I've even told this about that they can't believe Pete isn't in the LSU Hall of Fame.
Well, Pete Maravich is not in the Hall of Fame, despite being in many other Hall of Fames, including the Basketball Hall of Fame and in Ohio. He's recognized as the most famous LSU basketball player of them all. Now, Shaquille O'Neal ultimately did get a degree. In fact, he not only got a bachelor's, he got a master's and a Ph.D. He's Dr. Shaq, like Dr. Hugh Buckingham. But Pete Maravich, let's face it, is not going to come back and enroll in any classes. So why in the world isn't Pistol Pete Maravich given a pass on this and put in the Hall of Fame where he should be?
Well, the word is, of course, that he didn't graduate. That's what Herb Vincent told me immediately. But I said, "Herb, come on." And then Herb left town, and he's up to Alabama again. But we're still having some ill feelings, one way or another. Some of the people that were involved back then are probably still around. I don't know who they might be.
All right. Well, Pete Maravich, the 26th year anniversary of his death is this Sunday. It was January 5th, 1988, when he passed away doing what he loved most, playing basketball. And Hugh Buckingham was on the athletic council at the time. Before we leave you, I wanted to discuss the Oklahoma 45-31 victory in the Sugar Bowl last night over the University of Alabama and Nick Lou Saban. I'm sure there is jubilation in the Sooner State today, Hugh.
Well, there's jubilation, all right. I mean, not long ago, I got the shirt that says Daylight Saving Time. It says, set your clock back 1 second, then throw your team under the bus. But I can tell you that there was a lot of happiness last night. It almost felt like the tornado came through town. But today, we got LSU, and this is such a football city, and Oklahoma City has so many Cowboy fans that they're already talking about the Missouri game tonight.
All right, well, Daylight Saban time. I like that.
Yeah, set it back 1 second, run your team under the bus.
Well, last night, Alabama did not fare well in the Superdome against the University of Oklahoma, and the field goal woes continued for Nick Saban, and his team lost by 2 touchdowns to Oklahoma. Dan downtown. Dan, I want to slide you in before we part with Hugh. Good morning, Dan.
Morning. This thing about keeping Maravich out of the Hall of Fame, is LSU trying to pretend like it's focused on academic excellence when the current board is quite willing to go along with Jindal gutting the financing of academic advances?
Well, this is not a board decision really right now. It comes down to is whether or not the panel that selects the members of the hall would nominate and choose Pete Maravich. I think somebody has nominated him. Hugh, what you should do is put his name into nomination. You write well, and you can make the case for Pistol Pete. I think that would be a good move.
Well, I could do that. I'd have to, you know, spell all the words right.
Like Maravich, right? Maravich, by the way.
Yeah, I should think that. Maybe me and Dale will do it. Dale and I will co-author the maybe we should. We could all three do it. You can co-author. You can have three authors in academic referee journal papers. Well,
I don't mind putting his name up for nomination, but Pistol Pete deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. It's a travesty and really a national joke that LSU is holding the line on Pistol Pete when it makes an exception for other people.
There's something and somebody or a few people who know exactly what's going on. We just don't know them, but it's a skirmish, and it has been seen before, and I just, don't know. Dale was amazed that I had never heard of this argument that, well, the legislature put it up there.
All right, well, Dale Brown was also very forceful in wanting that arena named after Pete Maravich, and I think you could make a bigger case that his name should not be on the building because he lacks a degree, but since it's on the building where the Athletic Hall is housed, it seems a bit of a stretch to keep him out. But thank you, Hugh, and hope you're doing well in Oklahoma. Happy
New Year.
All
right, I'll see you in a few months.
That's a deal. We're joined in studio now by Cody Worsham, the editor of Tiger Rag. Now, LSU won a few nights ago, 21-14, a few afternoons ago, in Tampa in the Hall of Fame Bowl where Cody was against the University of Iowa. Jeremy Hill got 216 yards. He's leaving LSU, quite likely will never have a degree, which means that Jeremy Hill won't be in the Hall of Fame either, will he?
No, he won't, unless he comes back and gets his degree and maybe wins a national championship. But he'll go down as a great player. There's no doubt about that, but not a Hall of Fame player.
Okay, but he won't be a Hall of Famer. Probably Odell Beckham will not be a Hall of Famer. Jarvis Landry will not be a Hall of Famer. I don't know. Beckham, I think, did graduate. I think he already has his degree, so... some of them now are able to get through school in 3 years. I don't know how they do it, but they got some bright guys on that team.
Well, Zach Medberger graduated and got his degree, so maybe he can represent this era of LSU football in the Hall of Fame.
If he's a Hall of Famer. I'm not sure he is, but certainly Pete Maravich is if you judge him by the numbers, but he's not been given that honor. Now, last night, Alabama loses to... Oklahoma in the Sugar Bowl, and I get my Baton Rouge Advocate this morning looking for a story about it, and I'm going through it for the fifth time, and I don't see a story in the Baton Rouge Advocate about the Sugar Bowl last night other than a headline at the top of the page saying, "Sweet on the Sugar Bowl, check us out online for coverage." Now, why in the world would the Advocate put out a story, a paper on January 3rd, the day after the Sugar Bowl, which did not end that late, by the way, and there's no story about one of the biggest games of the year?
That's a good question. I guess they're trying to draw people to their website. That would be my guess. Like you said, the game didn't end particularly late, so there's definitely time to get coverage up. And I know they had writers there. I know Matt Harris was over there. Saw him tweeting from the game, so... I don't know. I'll have to go to the website and I guess and see what they're.
This makes no sense at all. And why would you even put out a paper if you're just going to steer people to a website? This is inexcusable. And the Picayune, by the way, is sending two reporters to Pasadena to cover the BCS championship game Monday night. Jim Kleinpeter and Ron Higgins will both be there. I'll be curious to see who the Advocate sends and whether there'll be a story the next day. Big story that is in the Advocate and TigerRag.com and everywhere else that reports on LSU sports, perhaps the top high school athlete in the country as far as football, from St. Aug, the running back Leonard Fournette, chooses LSU over Alabama and Texas. Big gain for Les Miles, and one he really had to have.
He did, and in the context of yesterday, it was big because LSU went into that game thinking they could get five-star commitments and only got two, but as disappointing as that was to lose guys from New Orleans to other programs, you do get Leonard Fournette out of New Orleans, one of the biggest commitments in LSU football history. Just a really great player with a bright future, has been compared to Adrian Peterson, which is about the highest praise that any running back can receive. So it's a big get for LSU, no doubt. You don't want to lose Gerald Willis out of New Orleans. You don't want to lose Speedy Noel out of New Orleans, but getting Fournette is huge.
Well, three players LSU was actively recruiting, two of whom Cody just mentioned yesterday, decided to go to other schools. And two of them, actually all three of them are going to SEC schools.
And two of them are going to divisional opponents. Tony Brown out of Texas, Beaumont, Texas, is going to Alabama. His sister actually runs track at LSU, and it looked like LSU would be a favorite for him, but he decided on Alabama kind of at the last minute, and then you lose Willis to Florida and Noel to A&M, all SEC programs. That's tough, and it makes the loss sting a little bit more.
Well, here's a note from Elliot as we part company, saying that Anthony Jennings, the new quarterback, is the second coming of Jordan Jefferson.
I disagree with that. I think he's going to be a little bit better than Jefferson, but we'll see. Jefferson won an SEC title, so.
All right. I do note from Chris Frank that New Orleans Advocate readers did get Sugar Bowl coverage today, but not Baton Rouge Advocate. Thank you, Chris, for that note, and thank you for listening. Thank you, J.C. Kane. Thank you for a good week, and we will be back come Monday. Until then, stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.